Kia ora and welcome to Aaron's Podcast, episode 224. Today is Friday, July 9, 2010. I suppose I should start today by saying good morning, because I'm recording in the morning, which is something I don't normally do. I usually record in the afternoon. But if I don't record now, I won't have time to do it at all, and I don't want to let it go any longer, because I'm starting to fall behind. The main thing that's going on now, of course, is that it's the busiest work week of the month for me, and it's actually been going rather well. I've been running far ahead of the past 2 months. Last month was a disaster, but I've been running quite ahead. Not quite where I want to be at this stage. I wanted to actually be finished by today, but I still have a bit more work to do. But again, as I said, if I didn't stop to record, I wouldn't get to do it at all this week. So there you go. But but it is going better this month, and my obsession with working harder on it is apparently paid off, which is a good thing. And hopefully next month things will be even better, but we shall see. This afternoon we're going to a funeral. A friend of Nigel's, well, actually it's a brother of a friend of Nigel's, died over the weekend, and his funeral's today. So we're going to go to that, and that's another reason why I couldn't record this afternoon. Of course, the thing that was going on before all of this work started was Pride 48, and I think by pretty much anybody's standards, it was a huge success. And you can probably hear Jake barking in the background. Somebody's out in the park. Anyway, it had, about twice as many participants as last year, so that's really good. And when you consider all of the people who took part in the shows, because most shows had more than one person, that means that there were well over 40 people participating, probably pushing 50 or even more. I don't know because I didn't do an actual count. And that's really good. There was good listenership. There was good participation in the chat room. And like I said, by any measure, it was a success. Now, there was some unpleasantness associated with it at the end and also in the chat room, but I'm not going to go over that again. It's been talked about elsewhere, and I think it's been talked to death, quite frankly, and I just want to drop it and move on. So that's what I'm going to do. However, there was some good news that came out of some of the bad news. One of my favorite podcasters, favorite people, was forced off the interwebs altogether, but he's now back. And his new show, new site, is called My Honey Wears Plaid, which is all one word, myhoneywearsplaid.com. And I will put a link in the show notes, and at some stage I'll get the links on my sites as well. But you can check him out. I had posted on my podcast site, aaronspodcast.com, a place for people to say farewell, because what happened is that he just abruptly left and people didn't have a chance to say anything or whatever. They couldn't contact him anymore. And I just thought that people might want to have a chance to say something, and so they did. But he's back faster than I expected. He'd planned on coming back anyway, but frankly, faster than I thought he would. And among other things, it means that his group shows are coming back. I listened to his most recent, technically, I suppose it's the first episode of the new format, and he said that he's looking at, I'm just pulling up the calendar, I believe he said Thursday the 22nd. That's June. That won't do me any good, will it? I haven't put my July calendar on my desk yet. I get these cardboard desk calendars from a printing company every 6 months, I think it is. So anyway, Thursday the 22nd he's looking at, I believe. I believe he said, or maybe it's the 29th. At any rate, I'll mention it, I'm sure, and I might even take part in it. So those are coming back. And some of you may be aware that I talked about resurrecting my live show, and part of my original thinking was to do it as kind of to sort of keep the seat warm until he was ready to come back. Well, now that he's going to be back so soon, I probably won't revive a live show, at least not anytime soon. Not until I've got time to actually devote to it and do it right, rather than just pick up where I left off. So I won't be doing a live show anytime soon, but eventually I hope to get back to that. But in a different format, as I talked about earlier, many episodes ago, when I was still actually doing live shows. But speaking of live shows, one of the other things that's been going on is that my Nigel and Daniel Brewer have joined forces to create a music show on QNation.fm called The Third Colony. And it airs at 9 p.m. Eastern Time in the Americas on Saturday, which is 1 p.m. Sunday here in New Zealand, I believe. And what they're doing is they're alternating weeks. So Nigel will be on 1 week, then Daniel, then Nigel, then Daniel, and so on. And I just think this is a brilliant idea, because having done a weekly show, I know what a drag it can be to try to be at a certain place at a certain time and always try to be ready and so on. And there's some weeks you just don't feel like doing it as well. But if you alternate weeks, as of course you may remember I did for a while with the live show, it makes it much easier to stay committed to it. Now, in my case, I got the time zones interfered, and I just couldn't keep doing it at that time because it was like 11 a.m. or something. Oh, pardon my squeaky chair. I must fix that. Anyway, and so I stopped. But I think it's good that they're starting out by alternating weeks, because that means that in a typical month, they do a show twice and on two weekends, and two weekends they've got off completely. And it also means that there's backup if one of them gets sick or if they want to take a longer holiday or whatever. There's more to work with there, and I just think that's a really good idea. Now, the show's name, and they've explained this, is sort of kind of science fiction-y, kind of, sort of. And it's derived in a loose sort of way from the fact that South Carolina, where Daniel is one of the original 13 colonies, British colonies, in the what's now the U.S., and New Zealand also was a former British colony, and so this is kind of like the third colony, or something like that. I don't know, but I'm sure they'll explain it more in their shows. I know that the boys are working on a promo, and when they have it, I'll certainly play it here on this podcast as well to remind you. But Daniel is on this week, and Nigel will be back the week after that. He started it out last week, even though he was full up with a cold, something that a phrase that Daniel likes to make fun of him over. But it was good. It was a good start, and I'm sure it's only going to get better as time goes on and they sort of settle into the new format. And we'll see how things progress from there. But I will remind you of it, and of course it is my duty to remind you when Nigel is the host, because, well, I just will. But it actually kind of touches on something I wanted to mention, and that's that, you know, Auntie Vera Charles speaks about how important it is for people in a long-term relationship to be basically selfless, to put the needs of your partner ahead of your own. And I generally agree with that. I mean, I think that's important. If you look outward, you're much more likely to be successful in a relationship than if you're always, you know, wrapped in, up in yourself. I mean, I think most people would know that. But we still each have our own particular needs, and what they are varies from person to person, which ones are take priority. And I think that it's important that people in a relationship still have what I call me space, which is just a place where they can be themselves, lost in their own thoughts, kind of wrapped up in their world. And what that is and what that looks like will vary from person to person. For some people, it might be watching a sports game on television. It might be watching a movie. It might be reading a book. For me, it's doing creative or quasi-creative things like blogging and podcasting. And Nigel doesn't listen to this podcast as a general rule, and he does read my blog, however. So this is sort of my thing to do that's creative, and I put myself into it. Well, somewhat creative anyway, and I put myself into it. It's my thing, my space. And similarly, Nigel's Third Colony show is his space. He does that, and that's why I wasn't on for the first episode. And I probably will rarely be on it, except maybe occasionally, maybe a segment to help him out with questions in the chat room or something like that. But as a general rule, I won't be taking part in it because it's his thing, it's his hobby, it's his space. Now, if he decides at some stage that he wants me to have a bigger role, that's his decision, and obviously I'll support him and I'll do that. But I'm not intruding into his space because, as I said, I think it's important that people in a relationship have me space to pursue their own interests and goals even sometimes, but to have a space to kind of be themselves. Because it is easy, it can be easy, I should say, to get lost in the we brain, you know, becoming just this couple and you march in lockstep. Now, as it happens, because we've been together for so long, I mean, it's 15 years this year, we often do think the same things at the same time or nearly the same time. And I generally know intuitively what he's going to think about something without even asking, or what he's going to feel about a situation, or maybe it might be even a news story, nothing to do with us. And so when you're with somebody for a long period of time, you inevitably sort of have this meshing and melding going on, which is another reason why I think it's all the more important to have something that you can call your own to focus on from time to time. Not all the time, obviously. I mean, I only podcast once or twice a week, generally speaking, apart from Pride 48 time. And I do try to blog every day, but, you know, there's always time that I've got where I can slip that in, you know, in the course of a day. So, but that's a whole nother issue. And So, yeah, that is part. It's two purposes to my telling you that. First is why I wasn't part of his first show and why I probably won't be on future shows. And also just to say what I think, that, you know, that you have to have me space. Also during this time, Nigel and I went to see Twilight Eclipse. Now, don't judge. I found it an entertaining movie, just like the others. It certainly wasn't great cinema, but it was entertaining. It's safe to say I am team neither. I'm not a huge fan of the movie, the books, the anything. I can understand the charms of Edward and Jake, the characters, why people might find them delicious. I don't necessarily agree with them, although Jake certainly has a great body. But it's an interesting thing. I was amused when the second movie came out, because in that movie, Jake takes off his shirt and his torso is really ripped. And there are a lot of people commenting on that, and they didn't feel that they should. And there were some photos online, and, oh, it's not appropriate to look at them, because at the time he was 17. And I remember when he turned 18, people were like, oh, now that he's legal. And the same thing happened with Daniel Radcliffe, who played Harry Potter. He was on Broadway in Equus. And the photos for that, which showed him naked, were, the character he plays is naked on stage. And so those photos were posted online, and people were saying, oh, we really shouldn't comment on that or pay any attention to it, until he turned 18, and then he was legal, and then it was different, even though the photos were shot when he was 17. But in New Zealand, of course, the age of consent is 16. And so the fact that these lads were, being found attractive wasn't particularly weird, because, well, I think it's actually not just the age of consent in New Zealand. It's also the fact that people are a bit less hung up about sex in general, unless it's a politician, in which case they go apeshit. But that's a whole other story. But, oh, there's my chair again. I must fix that. Anyway, speaking of the movie, though, on the weekend, there was a 23-year-old man who was described as a transient, which I guess just means he didn't have a fixed abode, who went to see the movie in Wellington, and when the movie was over, they found him dead in his chair. Now, I have to admit, I mean, this is a tragic thing, and I shouldn't, and I'm not making fun of it in any way. However, when I read the story, the first thing I thought to myself was, oh my God, somebody's making a vampire army. Because, I mean, it was the first thing that popped into my head. Now, it is very sad, and apparently they're going to do a post-mortem, because whenever somebody dies unexpectedly and they haven't seen a doctor, that's required by law that a post-mortem be conducted. And I certainly haven't heard the results yet. However, I did read online yesterday that the police said that the death was not suspicious. And I thought, hang on a minute. A 23-year-old man goes to see a vampire movie and dies in the theater, and it's not suspicious? But of course, that's a police phrase. What it means really is there are no suspicious circumstances, no foul play, that sort of thing. But I've always thought that phrasing was odd when somebody's found unexpectedly dead and it's not suspicious. But, I suppose it's similar when somebody is injured in an accident and the media will report that he's ill in hospital. I'm thinking, he's not ill, he's injured. I think that's actually a British expression that's used here. But anyway, that was actually what amused me more than the story wasn't amusing, but the fact that they said it wasn't suspicious kind of was. And the fact that, you know, he'd seen this vampire movie. But anyway, there are, of course, a lot of things going on in the news. The dipshit governor of Hawaii vetoed domestic partnership legislation, saying that decision like that shouldn't be left to one person or a few person. And then she, of course, being one person, made that decision. She's a hypocrite. She's also supposedly a lesbian, although I haven't seen any evidence of that. And it's an interesting thing because the question becomes, well, would that matter? Would I be any less harsh in my criticism if it was found out that she was secretly a lesbian? And the answer is no, because if somebody does the wrong thing, I'm going to call them out on it. It doesn't matter if they're gay, straight, or both. I don't know, whatever. Wrong is wrong, and she was wrong to veto that bill. The Hawaii Constitution guarantees equality, except in marriage, because they passed a constitutional amendment to allow the state to discriminate in marriage. But because of the equality, the state has to offer some alternative arrangement for same-sex couples, or it's violating its own constitution. So what she did was unconstitutional. Now, of course, she also said that it should be put up to a vote to the people, which is something I adamantly oppose. It is absolutely, unalterably, and completely immoral to ever put human rights up to a vote. It just is wrong, completely wrong. So the fact that she may or may not be, the fact that she may be a lesbian is irrelevant. There is I believe it's a transgender candidate in Florida or something who's running, and she similarly has really bad positions on issues, you know, like same-sex marriage, for instance. She's opposed to it. I would not support her. Mark Kirk, who's the Republican candidate for Senate in Illinois, has been outed, and I would not support him. He doesn't support same-sex marriage, and he only has like 80-odd percent approval rating from gay groups in Washington, D.C. He's currently a member of the U.S. House, whereas his Democratic opponent supports full marriage equality, repeal of DOMA, and repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And he's been talking like about those issues since the primaries, and it arguably would not do him any good to be promoting those issues. So I would say that they're pretty genuinely held. And so the fact that I may be voting against a gay person when I vote for the Democrat in the Illinois Senate race doesn't concern me in the least, because it's just like, I would suggest that it would be irrational for anybody to vote for somebody just because they're of your kind or they're one of your community or one of your people. You still need to vote for people who represent you and your interests in a larger sense. And in this case, the Republican, even though he is probably gay, does not represent my interests. So why would I vote for him? It's as simple as that. But today as well, the federal court has struck down parts of the Defense of Marriage Act in the state of Massachusetts. Now, there's a long way to go. There's two separate cases that were decided today. One was a challenge by the state of Massachusetts, and the other was a challenge to the civil service or whatever it is. And ultimately, this is going to go to the Supreme Court, and that's been a given all along that it was going to go there. And quite frankly, I have no idea what's going to happen, because the Supreme Court has a conservative majority and has for quite a while, regardless of whether or not Kagan is confirmed, as I expect she will be. The Supreme Court is conservative, and I have no idea how Anthony Kennedy is going to slide on this one. He was the deciding vote in repealing sodomy laws in Lawrence v. Texas, but that doesn't mean he's going to support declaring DOMA unconstitutional. Which it is. It clearly is unconstitutional. I think you'd have to have your head up your whatever to not see that. Nevertheless, because they're doctrinaire hard right conservatives, we know that Scalia, Thomas, Roberts, and Alito will all vote that to uphold DOMA. We know they will, because they're hard right conservatives. So Kennedy will be the deciding vote, and I have no idea how he's going to vote. I just can't possibly predict it. I would hope he would rule correctly and declare it unconstitutional, but I don't know. We'll see. But assuming that it is declared unconstitutional, what will happen next is that the hard right will go full throttle to get a constitutional amendment to define marriage as being between one man and one woman. Now, if they stick to that alone, I don't think that they're going to be able to get a constitutional amendment through, but if they stick to that alone, they could very well end up at least making progress. If they stick in a provision outlawing all civil unions as well, they don't stand a chance, because there are too many people who in the U.S. now who approve of some sort of recognition of same-sex relationships. So if they try to outlaw all legal recognition of relationships, they will fail, and they know that. So when they do launch their move to amend the Constitution, and they'll try to make it a campaign issue this year, mark my words, it will probably be narrowly defined just to marriage. And that will be key, because then they can get a lot of support of people who are uncomfortable with gay people or same-sex marriages, but don't want to outlaw all legal recognition. So we'll see if I'm right. Basically, I'm putting it out there now, because then if I'm right, you'll know. But right now I'm going to go on to comments. And the first comment is actually a phone message I received before Pride 48.
Hey, Arthur, this is Brother Sinanis. I'm just calling to thank you for all the work that you've put into Pride 48. I'm sure looking forward to start tomorrow. Have a good day. Bye.
Well, thank you, Brother Sinanis. I obviously received that before Pride 48, but I wanted to play it anyway, because I figure if anybody takes the time and effort to leave a phone message, the least I can do is play it on the podcast, you know? So thank you. Pride 48 was a lot of work. There's no doubt about that. It wasn't necessarily bad work, although there were times when it was really quite stressful. It was just, there was a lot to coordinate and to do and so on. And I saw my role as being sort of like a stage manager, standing in the wings, holding the curtain back so the talent can go on stage. It wasn't my role to be intrusive or in front or to be the actual star or whatever. My job was to get out of the way of the stars, but to make it so they could do it. And so, I think I was reasonably successful at doing that. People seemed to not have a whole lot of problems. I mean, there were some technical glitches here and there, but nevertheless, it seemed to go rather well. We received enough in donations to pay for the server and the site and, you know, the hosting and all that stuff for the next year. So we're good to go for the next year. So there will be more programming on Pride 48. And some will be back in June of next year, 2011. I, at this stage, am also hosting that as well, partly because nobody wants the job. But if somebody does come forward and say, oh, well, I'd really like to be the host, then hey, by all means, I'm more than happy to get out of the way. It's not about me, after all. It's about the event and keeping it going. Having said that, however, I am working on better organizing for next year because I learned some important lessons. Just about technical behind-the-scenes thing to make it easier for me to keep track of who's got what, when, where, why, how, and so on. So I don't miss anybody, not follow up on things and all that sort of stuff. Because there were a few things that fell through the cracks last time because I wasn't organized as well as I thought I was. You know, I thought I had it all set, and it turned out I didn't. But, you live and learn, don't you? Well, at least you hope to. But now let's go over the written comments that were the episode before Pride 48. And the first comment is from Roger Green, who said, I don't know, nude rugby doesn't bother me, but it's not one of those things I want to explain to the daughter yet, I guess. Of course, there are lots of on the news I want to shield her from. I end up watching the tees and picking and choosing what she can see. Oil slick, yes. War reporting about, even mention of casualties, yes. An actual firefight, which ABC showed, no. That story on anorexia, I ducked. What do you let the nieces see? Thank you, Roger. And that's actually an interesting question that I actually happened to be thinking about recently. Actually, it might have been when I saw your comment. And the short answer is I have no idea because they don't stay with us all that often. It's usually a few days a year, generally in the summer break. It's like January, probably. And they're not interested in the news at all. They just don't watch the news. So if we watch the news, I don't have to worry about what they see and what they don't see. Generally speaking, they watch Disney Channel or they'll play on the Wii or just go off and do something else entirely that doesn't involve television. When they're here, we usually do try to show them some, you know, family movie like, Aliens and Monsters or something like that, that they can both see and enjoy. But we don't watch violent movies or ones with overtly sexual themes, not because we're trying to shield them, but just because they wouldn't be interested. And we watch that sort of thing after they go to bed. And we try to you know, put on stuff that they would enjoy. So in that sense, we don't really shield them from anything. However, at the same time, we try to put on things that they enjoy seeing, and which means that it's almost invariably something that's, in quote marks, safe and doesn't pose any risks. Now, their parents are quite progressive, and so it's not like we have to worry about offending religious views or anything like that. So we don't have to, you know, censor in that sort of sense of net sense. But we do, just as I said, try to cater to their interests as much as we can, because we want them to have a good time when they're with us and not have to, we have to watch a documentary or something, you know. It's not our job to educate them, but to give them a holiday. And so that's what we do. But we don't particularly censor them. And I suppose that when they get a bit older and they might start to be more interested in the news, then that might become an issue. And it's certainly something I'd never thought about since we don't have children around every single day or even very often. But it's an interesting question and one that's certainly gotten me thinking. The next comment was from Do Not Post, and I hope that was referring to his email address or perhaps some of the stuff he talked about and not that I wasn't supposed to post the comment, because if it was, I did. But he says, hi, I've read all the messages for X, that's the podcaster who was forced off and is now back. And I noticed that on iTunes, people are now leaving feedback and mentioning his old podcast. So anyone doing a Google search may be able to find his new podcast. I'm not sure what the deal is that X worked out with his employer, but he should be aware of this vulnerability and that the asshole who reported him may be able to do it again. Just an aside, that was the gist of the situation, and it is explained on my blog that he had been outed to his employer about his podcast and his site and so on, and they all had to go. But the reviews, it's important to remember that iTunes doesn't automatically delete reviews. And in his case, when he deleted his original show and put up the interim show, it was on the same RSS feed that iTunes reads. And so all the comments transferred over to that, including ones that mentioned the old show name. So I went into iTunes and I deleted that review. And it was thanks to Andrew's comment here that I did that, because I didn't even think about it, really. I mean, he'd asked that before and I just forgot about it. And then Andrew reminded me. So I did that. And it takes 24 hours for it to be deleted from iTunes. And if you have left a review that you want to delete, all you need to do is to log into iTunes Store like you normally would, go to My Account, and in there will be Manage Reviews or something like that. You just click on that, and then it'll list all the reviews you've left, and there's a little link on there to delete. There should, it seems to me, be one to actually read the review as well before you do that, but there isn't, which is, I think, really odd. But anyway, so that's how you do it. And actually, while you're logged into iTunes Store, you might as well leave a 5-star review for Amron's podcast. Hey. Oh, and thank you, Moose. Moose just left one for me. Thank you. Which I found out because I was looking, anyway, it doesn't matter, I was looking for something else, and thought, I'll just see what's going on with mine. This is iTunes USA. Anyway, however, that's a very good point, but the new podcast has an entirely different feed, and it's not connected in any way with anything that he's done before, and although he asked that the feed be deleted, the old one, it wasn't as of the other day. Maybe it has by now, I haven't checked. But so it doesn't really matter that much. There is absolutely no connection between the interim podcast and the brand new one. Having said that, though, it still would be a good idea, if you've left a review for his original podcast, to go into iTunes Store and delete it, just to play it safe, because, you know, it's all about playing safe. Anyway, Andrew goes on. I heard perhaps one or two of his old podcasts before the shit hit the fan, and judging by all these messages of support, it was a very special podcast. Yeah, it was. And the new one will be too, I'm sure. Apparently, this old website had some nice pics on it too, and I never got to see them. Oh, the humanity. My life sucks. P.S. Saw the naked rugby clip on the new site, and packing my bags now. Note to self, buy a camcorder and lotion. He goes on, I've always figured that I would move to Canada if the Supreme Court of the United States, SCOTUS, didn't uphold equal rights for LGBTQ folks, but it's so frickin' cold up there. Brr. And I would really prefer to live in Hawaii, but they're so homophobic there. I know because I attended high school there. Picture hell on earth. Anyway, I'm now looking towards New Zealand, and not just because I want to cornhole Peter Jackson. Who, by the way, has lost quite a lot of weight, if you haven't seen him lately. Doesn't look nearly as scruffy as he used to. Anyway, he goes on, I always thought that most Pacific Islanders and Middle Eastern men were total hotties. And who doesn't love an Aussie or Kiwi accent? Andrew, we love a Kiwi accent. We tolerate an Aussie accent. We'll continue to listen to your podcast to hopefully learn more about immigration and the LGBTQ experience there. I hope to be podcasting someday, but I have to figure it all out first. Well, thank you, Andrew. And trust me, it's not hard to podcast. Obviously, I've been doing it for 3 years. but about the experience thing, one of the things that I'm working on, and I had to push it aside because of Pride 48, is I'm going to be doing an episode, which I hope to be a special episode, about LGBTQ youth here, well, primarily in Auckland. And if there's anything you want to know about that issue, that subject or what have you, drop me a line. You can send an email. There's a link on my site, or you can leave a comment or whatever, and I'll try to incorporate it. I haven't set it up yet. We agreed that we just put it off for a few weeks until Pride 48 was well and truly over. But I'm almost ready to do that now, and I certainly would value any feedback, and I would like to address any questions that you may have. But now we'll go on to the next episode, the comments from the next episode, and to kick that off, I have another phone message.
Hi, Arthur. This is Scotty, your little Aussie battler. Just wanted to ring you to quickly say that your segment on Pride 48 was definitely my most favorite over the whole weekend. Your talents surpass even my high expectations. Thanks again. Love your work. You put a smile on my dial. LittleAussieBattler.net.
Well, thank you for that, Scotty. And, of course, now everyone will see why I say we only tolerate the Australian accent. Just kidding. Of course, Scotty was a guest on my live show on Pride 48, and along with my lovely husband Nigel and Daniel Brewer. And I was particularly glad that he was able to join us because he wasn't able to do his own show on Pride 48 this year, and I wanted to include him, and that seemed the most logical way, probably because the time zones match up so well. But thank you for that, Scotty, and you've bought me another 30 days on my phone line now. Woohoo! But I'm going to go to the written comments on that live episode now. And the first episode was from Roger Green. The first comment was from Roger Green, who said, "It is Friendly's, first opened as an ice cream shop in Springfield, Massachusetts in 1935 that has the ultimate grilled cheese burger melt. It's on page 5 of the menu," and he provides a link. "I've seen it on the menu. My wife and I have threatened to share one someday." And for those who haven't listened to that episode, it is an hour and a half long, we were talking about this thing that was a competition to the Double Down. And it is two grilled cheese sandwiches with basically a burger in between them. It's absolutely, it sounds disgusting and alluring all at the same time. And if I were there, I would probably try it. I don't think I could eat the whole thing, God knows. But I would give it a go. So thank you for that, Roger. And then he has another comment, and this was also in answer to something we talked about. It's 11. "What happens if I don't respond? Although the law makes it a crime not to answer the decennial census, the American Community Survey and other mandatory censuses, and authorizes the courts to impose a fine of up to $5,000 for failure to respond, the Census Bureau views this approach as a last result." And he provides a link. And because we were saying that we didn't know what the penalty was for not doing it in the U.S., not replying to the census in New Zealand is a crime, I knew. Well, I've looked that up as well. And it turns out that there's a $500 fine for not answering the census, which is about $355 US today. And because that's upon conviction and plus court costs on top of that. And then if after your conviction you still continue to refuse to fill out the census, there's an additional $20 per day fine, which is just over $14 US, $14.20, something like that at the moment. So it's not a huge fine, and it could be why some people are so inclined to try to avoid it. And every year we do get some people who try to have this high-profile thing of trying to avoid it. But the statistical information that it provides is just absolutely amazing and incredibly valuable. We don't have it is used in part to determine the boundaries of the electorates for parliament, but it does things like it helps show where the needs are for social spending and education and health and blah 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 blah. So it's incredibly useful information, and it's used the same way in the US. It's just that there's also the added layer of redistricting and so on, which is based in part on census data. But it's interesting how much more adamant the U.S. is that people fill it out, and yet so many people still don't. Interesting. I wonder what the compliance rate is in New Zealand. I haven't seen that anywhere else. Let's see if I can find that. Anyway, the next comment was from Michael in Stuttgart, who said, "Oh my God, this was an amazing show. Damn my time zone. I would have loved to have joined the fun live. Nigel, I love you." Thank you, Michael. Everybody loves Nigel. They love his accent. And I'm chopped liver. And the final comment was from Turnipad, who said, "In our defense, I just want to add that we were standing in the duty-free shop and wondering if it was cheaper to buy our booze here, there, or upon our arrival in Florida. Very happy to see that metric is slowly and secretly making its presence in America. Love how it all started with booze." Thank you, Turnipad. You know, it's a funny thing about the metric system by stealth in the U.S., because it has been doing that for many, many years. I remember back in the early 70s when they really started pushing the conversion, and 7-Up was running these commercials where they were showing the difference between a liter and a quart, and their tagline was, "It was a liter bit more." And that's also when alcohol started being sold in metric bottles and of course, obviously, soft drinks. and you started seeing dual road signs occasionally, and speedometers were in miles per hour and kilometers per hour, all those sorts of things. And then all of a sudden there was the backlash, and people started saying, and I remember this so vividly, why should we change to their system when the rest of the world is changing to ours? And we really believed that. I mean, I didn't know any better, but I was still pretty young. And there were just so many people were adamant about that. And as late as the 1990s, when I was moving to New Zealand, I still found online forums where people were arguing that the rest of the world was converting to the U.S. system. And it was nonsense when it was first said, and it's even more nonsense now. The U.S. is one of, I think, three or four countries left in the world that aren't metric. It's the only, I was going to say civilized, but that's a bit unfair. It's the only first world nation that doesn't use the metric system. Now, of course, there's often a lot of overlap. In Britain, people will often refer to miles, for instance. And here in New Zealand, people will sometimes refer to their height in inches and feet. Although that's getting rarer and rarer, I've noticed, just in the time that I've been here. But because we have so many people who are immigrants from Britain or first-generation descendants from immigrants, there are still a lot of people who express their weight in stone, singular. They don't say stones, generally speaking. They say stone. I'm 14 stone. Now, I have no idea how much a stone is. I don't really care, to be honest, because it's not a real measure. I converted to the metric system when I arrived in New Zealand, and it was easy. And I've talked about this a little bit before, apart from a few things. Temperature was one of them. Actually, temperature was the only one that I really had that I really struggled with, because while I knew what 70 degrees Fahrenheit felt like, I had no idea what, say, 20 degrees Celsius felt like. And so that was my only real adjustment. But my advice to anybody going to a metric country is go cold turkey. Don't try to convert back and forth. Just learn what the new things are and move forward. It's much easier. But that is it for today, and that is it for this week. I will be back next week with probably one episode. I don't know that I'm going to have a chance to do a second because we've got house guests toward the end of the week, but we'll see. You know, you just never know. Have a good weekend, everybody, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.